Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So yesterday, Chicago Police Officer Luis Huesca laid to rest, that is. And, you know, I was thinking about it. It didn't hit me yesterday, but this is perhaps part of the problem, the desensitization that so many Chicagoans have for our politics. Isn't it kind of a big deal that a police officer, Chicago police officer's family doesn't want the mayor and the governor at the funeral service for their fallen family member and fallen Chicago police officer? Isn't that a big deal? I feel like I'm a bit a nerd to it, too. Why I didn't pick up on that yesterday when it came over the transom that that was indeed the fact, and that BLM Brandon and Jelly Belly were going to abide it. Of course they are, because they don't want to be embarrassed by showing up and being told to leave, a la Kathy Hochul. But
it took a while for Mayor Brandon to realize he should not attend the event.
But what does that say about where we are? What does it say to people who voted for Pritzker and maybe to a lesser extent even BLM Brandon, but also consider themselves pro-law enforcement or consider themselves for law and order or are opposed to the turnstile justice we mete out to repeat violent offenders? I mean, isn't that sort of a new place for Chicago? Open repudiation of the mayor and the governor by police. Remember, these are uniters. These are politicians who are going to heal our self-inflicted and invented traumas. And yet here they are, because this is them, a Latino family says, Johnson and Jelly Belly, stay away as we lay to rest our loved one. I think that's a new low for Chicago. 312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline. 64636DA, turnkey.protection.
What's also a new low, you know, the blonde chick in charge of COPA, I think her name's Catherine. She went to the wake and they asked her to leave not once, but twice. When somebody asks you to leave the first time, out of respect for the family, you go.
Well, yeah, sure.
Yeah, because she's, I mean, that woman, these politicians think so highly of themselves. And this family, I think they did a noble job of sticking it to them and just saying enough, enough. And his sister, Lily, she was at the FOP headquarters. It's the only time they spoke. She did not speak at the funeral. But she called out the politicians, and her brother could have been transferred from that district because, you know, Preston was from that district, too, and she was killed on her way home from work. Very similar to what happened to Luis.
Please, to be transferred, and he chose to stay here. And it's so sad to see that he paid with his life, but that this will probably be somebody else's story in a week, tomorrow. Because nothing has changed, and I feel like the community needs, just Chicago needs to step up and hold the people who make these policies that allow third, fourth, five chances to people that have made so many mistakes, and then they turn around and they murder innocent people, and it feels like the bad people are protected more than the people that put their lives at risk to make sure that we're safe. that they're regular citizens. And nobody wants to talk about that. Nobody wants to step up and say that these people that make these policies, they work for you. You don't work for them. And it's not okay for you to hear gunshots and think that that's okay. That's an everyday thing.
I suppose the sympathizers to defund the police, those who rationalize their support for politicians like Jelly Belly in particular, so we can fold in the suburbs into this conversation. I suppose they, you know, turn a blind eye to these issues. They agree and let the family grieve. They would say, because, you know, they're always going to try to do tit for tat, usually with false equivalences. They would say, well, this is no different than a family member who loses a loved one to a criminal who committed a crime with a gun. And they blame Republicans who are opposed to gun control. And I stand with those families the way that conservatives are standing with police families. I suppose that's an argument you might hear to try to defend an indefensible posture that these Chicagoans have taken, and the ongoing support for indefensible postures and the politicians who take them. But, of course, the difference is in that situation, family member says, oh, if we would have banned guns, then my family member wouldn't have been killed. Well, we're not standing with the people who kill, period. That's the difference. And we're not rationalizing them, and we're not saying that they deserve 4 and 5 chances and acting in furtherance of that. We're not releasing them. In fact, we're the ones who support, generally speaking, the harshest penalties for people who commit crimes with guns, while prosecutors like Kim Fox run around saying she's focused on all of her office's resources on violent offenders and repeat violent offenders and criminals who commit crimes with guns. And yet, we see what we see, exactly what Huesca's sister said.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment, because I'm so sick, you know, people saying, keep Chicago out of your mouth, and we're the butt of every joke. But then you have this family who's truly in pain, and they're never going to get their brother back. And they stuck it to the and they didn't mean to. They're not political people, Dan, but they were damn well not going to let Mayor Johnson, who's a big defund policer, and they know that, or Governor Pritzker, who supported the Safety Act. They certainly were not going to let them come into that hall, or come into that church yesterday.
Right. And so what does that say about where we are? I mean, I know the need to sort of silo everything so that there's no implication from an action over here to a result over there. But I mean that this would not have happened under most, if not all, maybe with the exception of Lightfoot, previous governors and mayors, Democrats and Republicans. I don't remember Rod Blagojevich being told he can't come to or Pat Quinn.
No.
I mean, so left-wingers, too, you know, left-wing gadflies like Pat Quinn, political hacks like Rod Blagojevich. I mean, go back as far as you want to go back. Republicans, Democrats, obviously, city of Chicago, it's all Democrats. Even with the contentiousness between FOP and Tiny Dancer, which is fine. It's okay that for there to be contentiousness, but the matter is over what issue. If it's about, you know, pay and pension benefits and so forth and how you fund these ever-escalating pension sweeteners, sure. I mean, we have to have dollars and cents conversations with police and fire just like anybody else. But when it comes to the approach to violent crime in Chicago, when it comes to the appeasing and coddling of professional agitators in our institutions and on the streets who want to defund police, who want to decarcerate criminals, when it comes to the relentless demonization of police. Now, that would be an area where I can't really understand the contentiousness. And to the extent that there are people that are taking that position, then you would think that that would be a minority position that is quickly drowned out by the moral authority of the majority in defense of everybody's interests in living in a safe neighborhood. But that's not what's happened.
Oh, and Mayor Johnson yesterday, I don't know if you heard this, he blamed the FOP on the reason he wasn't allowed to go to the funeral. That had nothing to do with it. The family did not want him there.
Yeah, and this is not
because of the policies that they put in place.
But this is a new place.
But this is, I get it.
So what happened? But so I mean, are we acknowledging it? Are you really internalizing what this means? It's the same way when the police turned their back on, former Sandinista mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, Warner Wilhelm.
These police departments are waking up, realizing they have a voice against politicians who make their job harder.
Yeah. But
I don't know. Look, because it happened in New York. It's happening here. It's going to happen somewhere else.
Yeah. But there's still a problem, though. They still can't get out of the old paradigm, political paradigm, as we talked about. And neither can the voters. I mentioned this last week or the other week when we talked to John Garrido, right? The Safety Act, making the city and the state unsafe. Making police officers more exposed, writing a $10,000 check to Justin Slaughter, the lead sponsor of the Pritzker Purge Law in the House. That's what FOP did. Endorsing Jonathan Jackson. That's what the Chicago Fire Department did. And then they rescinded it when he called them racists. So they can't, that's part of the problem. Part of maybe why I didn't appreciate it yesterday when it should have struck me is that I'm a bit a nerd to it, too, because the police and fire unions are, because the electorate is. I mean, almost nothing the radical left does draws any response from Chicagoland except to a particular individual family who's going to stand up for their fallen family member like the Huescas did. But will that have reverberations throughout the city? Region? I'm skeptical. Jerry, Northwest Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, good morning. Just a couple of comments about, this the situation with the funeral. I don't think this mayor should even be acknowledged in regard to this situation. He had, no right to even comment about this, about not being invited to this funeral. How dare he? I think that the citizens of this city should be just as outraged as the police officers are in regard to all that is going on here, all that's going on across the country. Also, the other comment I have is to compare the murder of a police officer to the murder of a gangbanger who has been in an outstanding rivalry with other gangs, there is no comparison. I don't think the two should be spoken in the same sentence.
Who are you talking about? What gang?
Well, like when you have murders where two gangbangers get in shootout.
Oh,
and one
yeah.
of them dies.
Just generally speaking.
And
right.
They,
yeah, of course.
Yeah, and to compare that to a police officer being murdered while he's trying to protect the citizens, there is no comparison, I don't believe. So yeah. if people feel that all of these murders are the same, they're not.
Yeah, right.
And I have a son who's a police officer, friends, sons and daughters, and every day it's just unbelievable the point that it has gotten to that these police officers are far more at danger, at far more danger than I or my colleagues ever were.
Right. They're hunting down. And, they're hunting them down.
Well, and the fact is that the officers can't stop the people that they know. Like, they can identify these people, and they're certain that most likely they have a weapon. A guy walking down the street with a mask on his face and a hoodie up, and a backpack and sneaking down an alley. These were stops that were made all the time, and now they can't do them. This is why people are walking around with guns. This is why there's no problem shooting at the police and shooting at citizens. And the citizens of this city need to get behind the police officers and be just as outraged, I believe. Thanks. I appreciate the time.
Thanks for the call, Jerry.
And speaking of weapons, they did find the officer's gun, but they're still searching for the gunman.
They got a relative of the suspect they're searching for in custody, right? Charged with unlawful use of a weapon.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. They picked him up in Morgan Park. So they're zeroing in.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Business owners, now's the time for your business to make the move to a locally owned business bank. Hi, Mike Gallagher here to let you know that you don't have to look far. Signature Bank was founded in Chicago with a simple mission to help companies like yours grow, succeed, and thrive. Their decisions are made locally by a terrific team that knows your name, cares about your business, and invests in your success. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. I'm a customer. As business owners, they knew that local family-owned businesses were not getting the help they needed or deserved. So I invite you to reach out to my friends at Signature Bank today. Write the number down. Remember this phone number, Signature Bank, 773-467-5630, and learn all about this great bank, 773-467-5630, or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So we're talking about Luis Huesca's funeral yesterday, and specifically the open disinvitation from the Huesca family to two specific politicians, BLM Brandon and Jelly Belly, and what that means, because that's a new place for Chicago and for Illinois. Yeah, there was obviously acrimony between Lightfoot and Brandon Johnson, but a police officer's funeral, someone killed basically in the line of duty. I know he was coming home, but still.
He had his uniform on. His badge was stolen. They still haven't found that.
And so, you know, thinking about that and challenging people who support politicians who are the targets of open hostility from a grieving Latino cop family. And, you know, it's interesting, too, because obviously they identify as police officers first. Isn't that interesting? For all the identitarian talk, maybe this is a teachable moment or a moment of reflection too. Black, white, Latino, it's police. It's police coming together to honor Huesca and, yeah, most of Chicagoland too. Although most of Chicagoland doesn't honor them the way they behave at the ballot box. But it's about their behavior. It's not about them being a Latino officer or black officer or a white officer. It's about their work, professional work, in trying to provide for the public's safety. What a sort of a novel way to assess someone. And so they're assessing the politicians in the same way, by their behavior, not their intersectional score. So much to learn in this moment. And maybe that would be one silver lining from the tragic loss of Officer Huesca, obviously in addition to a violent predator, the violent predator who killed him, being removed from the streets for the rest of his life.
Yeah, and you mentioned that they're closing in on him. I just can't believe it's taking this long, especially since, there's a $100,000 reward, too, out for him. You'd think somebody in his family would turn him in.
Carlos Yanez was an officer who was shot in the line of duty. He almost died, right? He was Ella French's partner. Yeah. He had this to say about Huesca's death.
When it first happened, it was the floodgates open. You know, it was all over again. It didn't have to happen. Something needs to change in this city.
Mm-hmm.
Remember,
change in the city.
Mayor
Light, always here.
Mayor Lightfoot called her Ella Franks, and then Superintendent Brown called her Ella Fitzgerald. Ella French.
Lucia Chavez spoke at the service. She was a friend of Luis Huesca's from the academy.
This uniform doesn't make us robots. I hope this tragedy unites us to change our city. The police officers need our community, and our community needs our police officers.
So what about it, Chicagoland? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. I would love to play that to every Pritzker voter in Chicagoland and say, what do you have to say to Officer Chavez? What do you think? Mike Southside.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Being in the crowd of officers yesterday, the division was zero as far as racially in any way. Everybody was blue, and blue was all that mattered amongst every type of officer that was there. And the consensus that the decision by the family to exclude certain politicians was universal.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I applaud the Huesca family for drawing a line. But the question is, will FOP do the same? I mean, how about a tough question? I mentioned this. I'll mention it again.
Yeah.
FOP, after all the consternation over the Pritzker purge law and all the pushback and what the implications now that we're seeing, and prosecutors, real prosecutors like Bob Mylan, will tell you, of course, it's worsened public safety cops. I know this as well. So to real prosecutors. $10,000 check to Justin Slaughter.
For what? Why?
Because you know, we have to have access to him because he's going to make a good vote on a piece of pension legislation that we want. Do you want FOP to continue playing that game?
Not particularly.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for the call, Mike.
Is that why John Cantanzara won't come on our show?
I don't know what. I mean, I don't know.
Keep calling. I'll keep calling.
I don't know.
Because we support police here at AM560.
So the Huesca family drew a line.
They sure did.
Who else will? That's the question. Jordan Antioch.
Good morning, guys. Another shooting, right? Another cop killed, and it's tragic. And I understand that they draw that line, and they call those politicians out and say you're not welcome at this funeral. And I think that's great, and it's tragic that it had to get to that, but I just don't have any faith. I have zero confidence that it's anything more than that. It's just a statement, and when they walk into the polling place, they're going to yank the arm for anybody that's got a D next to their name because they're going to vote for their pension. The world can fall out around them, and I just don't have any faith that they'll stand against that and vote for it. They're going to vote for their pension, and I kind of don't blame them that you've been working your entire life for that, but I just think their politics are rooted in them so deep that like you said, the FOP is going to donate to Justin Slaughter. I'm a Teamster, and 300 of us called our local when they had that crap in the basement to find out what was going on.
Yeah.
And I questioned the guy, and I said, wait a minute. That is a Teamster building. You give to Democrat politicians in this state, and you gave office space and to a group that's going to protest the DNC. So how much sense does that make? Now, forget that I understand they were crying non-American. It's just the politics are rooted so deep that I don't think they know anything else but Republican bad, Democrat good, and that's it. And I just don't have any faith that they'll vote otherwise.
It was a group that was chanting death to America, death to Israel.
Well, they were being trained on how to be professional agitators. But they won't. That's not exactly true what Jordan said, though. Because Chicago police will vote Republican. So Chicago police, in terms of a electoral cohort, are not the problem. Even rank-and-file Teamsters are not as much of the problem as the leadership. We've talked to, here we go again, leadership. So, you know, is this a moment where the rank and file draw a line within the union to say, we're not going to play politics the way that we've played them before. We're not going to stand for it. We're not going to stand for Justin Slaughter is, if not public enemy number one, he's one of the public enemies because he's the author of the Pritzker Purge Law. And I mean, good Lord, if you remember the first iteration of it, which he was the lead sponsor of, it was exponentially worse than what we have right now. I mean, it was lunacy in addition to basically illegible and illogical. And you want to give this guy $10,000 because you want him on a pension vote? So we're going to say, no, we're not doing that anymore. We're going to draw some lines the way the Huesca family did. Same thing with the Teamsters. We're going to draw some lines. There may be Democrats here and so on and so forth, but I doubt there's too many Teamsters who want these effete, p-hat-wearing D-bags learning how to say death to America at their union hall. So we're going to draw a line. We're not going to have, we're not going to support, we're not going to have our dues supporting, Hamas-adjacent elements in Chicagoland. We're going to draw a line. There's just no line drawing that's done. The Huesca family did it. Who else will? I ask again. Internally, externally. You know, because the internal can lead to more external line drawing and accountability. I've said before, when are we going to hold these politicians accountable? Well, and this is not directed at Canton Zara specifically, but it's generally, because I'm folded in the Chicago Fire Department, the Chicago Firefighters Union, and these trade unions too. How about you lead by holding your leadership accountable and changing the way your union does politics, where your bread gets buttered? And maybe that leadership inspires others to follow suit. Is that a sensible concept? And I would also say this is a real problem to not have an opposition party. Because if you had an opposition party that was competent and courageous, and you don't, then you would have the questions that I'm asking and the statements that the Huesca family made all over the place on TV and digital platforms right now, making the same challenge that the Huesca family did. But we don't have anybody who's... We don't have any leadership of any institution or organization in this state that has the competence and courage to do that.
Remember, stop thinking that this is okay.
David Southside.
Yes, good morning, Dan, Amy. David Dewar ran for state rep in the 35th district as a JFK Democrat. On this issue of public policy, I challenged FOP President John Conazaro because my opponent, Mary Gill, voted for the Safety Act, for illegals to be police officers, for parolees to get out, all the nonsense. And he said she did everything we asked, Dave, and he gave her $10,000. So the buck starts with FOP. They need to defend their people that are out in the streets. Who knows? This could have been a repeat offender, and John Conazaro needs to be accountable as well. I definitely agree with you on this topic.
Thanks for the call, David.
Dan and Amy, same thing with the painters' union.
Yeah, I mean it's everywhere. I mean, again, even the unions that I have, that I give the benefit of the doubt, essentially, that I have a sort of a favorable disposition to, like police, like Local 150. In the trades.
Dan and Amy, that sister of his, Lily, should run for office.
She should.
At least she knows what's going on. She's not putting her head in the sand like the rest of the people out there.
Well, she can't anymore.
No.
So the question is, does it take you to be in the position of Lily and the Huesca family before you say, well, I can't keep my head in the sand anymore? It's the whole, how bad does it have to get for you and for us? Matt Southside.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Actually, just now you just made my point for me. I was going to say I understand people have families to support and stuff, but my whole thing is you know, you got all these cops taking orders, you know, basically, I'm not saying the Chicago police necessarily, but like investigating churches and stuff like that, they're going along with it too. So yeah, maybe, I hate to say it, but maybe when people start getting hit with this stuff and, you know, it comes home for them, that's the only time things are going to change. Like I said, I get it. People can't just quit their jobs and walk away. But I mean, then it's a choice they're making, and you know what? We're going to continue to have this problem.
Thanks for the comment. Well, here's the other thing, though, too. I mean, it's really a leadership problem because the numbers are there, and the coalition partners are there. It's just nobody's tied it together. You don't think the trade unions could go to the big contractors their guys work for and bring in that part of the business sector? You don't think these squishy C-suites are susceptible to pressure from the police, the law and order side of the equation now, the people that jump in to finance Paul Vallis or to finance Eileen Burke and think they're doing something? Well, they can be pressured to be part of a coalition, too, of the sensible and the law-abiding on behalf of the sensible and the law-abiding. But nobody's doing it. Nobody wants to be the nail that sticks up. And I don't know what they're afraid of. I mean, to be afraid of Brandon Johnson, how pathetic is that? To be afraid of Jelly Belly Pritzker.
Please.
It's not even, I don't even think it's fear. I think it's just that they don't want a revenue stream jeopardized. And that's perhaps the saddest commentary of all, isn't it? 30 pieces of silver. Well, guess what? As I've said before, maybe you think that's just politics, but maybe you aren't playing politics as well as you think you are. All those pension sweeteners, Officer Luis Huesca's, he's not going to be able to enjoy them in retirement, is he? So what's the point again? Greg in Jefferson Park.
Hey, good morning, guys. Nothing's going to change. Here we, up in Jefferson Park here, we got, you know, of course, empty storefronts like everybody else. They had a meeting to talk about how we can fill them. And a guy who owns a bakery that's been around here for, I don't know, 50-plus years complained about the pot store across the street that they were, I don't know, selling pot, selling whatever after hours. And there have been shootings. He's had bullets come through his window and stuff, other crime associated with the place. And he said this at a meeting with Jim Gardner, who held the meeting, our alderman. And so he's complaining about all this stuff about, you know, you can't do anything to get more people to move in here when you got these problems associated with this pot store and the police know about this. A week later, he had a bunch of inspectors come to his bakery. He's got all kinds of problems, and he's moving. He's heading out to Arlington Heights. So nothing ever changes. It's the same old, same old. You got nothing but corruption, whether it's police, the aldermen, whoever. And Gardner, this is his last hurrah. The idiots of this ward voted a lunatic lefty as their committeeman, and that's what the next alderman's going to be. It's sickening. Time to get out.
All right. Thanks for the call, Greg. It's not a very happy note.
No.
Well, not very happy times. We'll see. We'll see who wants to draw the line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, business owners, is your business and money in good hands? Does your bank invest in your success? Hi, Mike Gallagher here, letting you know that when you need a relationship bank, Signature Bank makes commercial banking personal. I love these guys. Not only do they have expansive industry experience, a strong financial track record, but they're also highly capitalized for strategic growth. That's so important. That's why Signature Bank is my bank. They know what it means to grow a business by designing solutions that are right for you and only you. These are real people. They're ready to help. So reach out to my friends at Signature Bank. Make the call today, 773-467-5630. Or visit them online at signaturebank.bank. That's signaturebank.bank. Your business could be Signature Bank's next success story. Go online, signaturebank.bank. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Signature Bank.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
We'll be right back. top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So, I don't know how interested people are in this. I'm barely interested in it, but and it involves me. But I guess I'll address it since, you know, Cranes and Chicago Tribune are hyperventilating about it and insinuating all sorts of Jean Le Carre plot lines in the operation of the PAC that I ran and used to support Darren Bailey's candidacy for governor, because Jelly Belly and his henchmen filed a State Board of Elections complaint against me for allegedly illegally coordinating with the Bailey campaign. And the State Board of Elections, in their infinite wisdom, allowed this frivolous complaint to go forward. And so there was a hearing yesterday. And I think I've talked about the headlines, the breathless headlines on the air like a long time ago, like during the actual campaign or shortly thereafter when we did the postmortem on it in 2022. But to the extent that there is interest or questions, I'm happy to explain it. This is an example of local lawfare. I will say that. And so I guess that's something that people should take notice of. First of all, of course, I mean, it couldn't be more poetic. The law firm representing Jelly Belly's henchmen, it's the executive director of the State Democrat Socialist Party, who's doing it at the bidding of the governor, obviously. And the legal representation is Mark Elias's firm. Mark Elias is the Steele dossier guy. He's like the top skullduggerous attorney for the Democrats nationally when it comes to trying to weaken ballot integrity laws and otherwise, you know, pay for manufactured propaganda that you'd have to be a credulous rube like Jim Comey to believe. Anyway, that's where it's at. And just one more point, and then if people are interested,
questions.
Or, you have questions, fine.
312-642-5600. Grab a line and ask Dan any question about this. Stop texting me. Ask him yourself.
Just one more point about this.
Yes,
it's hysterical. So, I mean, it's not, but it is at the same time. The parallels to the waiting to exactly explain what was violated and the evidentiary support for said alleged violation. So the State Board of Elections has essentially allowed this complaint to go to the hearing stage. And now it's like an administrative judge who's a retired lawyer who heard the testimony. He'll make a recommendation to the State Board of Elections, and then the State Board of Elections will decide if the case has been made or the case should be dismissed. That's basically it.
Okay.
And if they say that there's a case here, then I will be summarily executed at the Thompson Center.
Can I come and watch?
Yes.
So are you going to be stoned first, or straight
event.
Hanging, or what are we going to do?
Yeah. But you understand, like they concede. There are no rules that they have promulgated or to define what constitutes illegal coordination. But they're allowing the case to go forward to use as the basis to make rules about what constitutes illegal coordination. So it'd be like, we don't have a statute against theft, but we're going to use the case about an alleged theft to decide how we want to handle theft as a matter of law. That's basically ex post facto. So it goes against constitutional norms. You have to establish the legal regime before you hold somebody accountable under it, right? I mean, this is like, you don't need to be a particularly talented lawyer to know this. You just need to be an American who has some understanding of what living in a free society should be, and sort of the constitutional guarantees of against this sort of arbitrary adjudication of cases. I mean, so just get, we don't know, we haven't established anything, but we're going to try to establish it in real time as this case is argued. No, that's not how it works. Not in a state or a country that is interested in the rule of law. But that's what we're doing here. And I'm not, so first of all, just foundationally, it's ridiculous. The State Board of Elections wanted to get its act together and provide some more detail on what constitutes illegal coordination. Well, that's what they should do. And then you say, well, here's what we have set forward. Here is the administrative rules regarding coordination. Here's the definition of it. So here's what you can and can't do. They don't have any of that. They don't have any case law. But then in addition to all of that, as provided in testimony yesterday, and so did Bailey, I mean, he never talked. You know, administrative judge said in terms of trying to provide some definition to this, the retired lawyer who's, you know, overseeing this case, making a recommendation, is, well, it has to be coordination around specific expenditures. Okay, but that's fair. And there never was. And they don't have any evidence of that there ever was, because there never was. I didn't want to talk to Darren Bailey or his campaign. And so I didn't. And I certainly wasn't taking any input on what I was doing from them or anybody else outside of, you know, the group that I'm a part of and Dick Uihlein, who provided most of the underwriting for it. So the whole thing's absurd. We didn't see eye to eye. Obviously, we didn't even have to have a conversation about it, just in terms of the messaging approach and so on and so forth. What I've said publicly on the show about my views on the Bailey campaign, all of this has been said. Right. But now this, you know, the Tribune and Cranes wanted like hype this into, you know, right wing radio talk show host and super PAC, blah blah blah, do do do. So the inflection and the scary headlines, and it makes it into something it isn't. And by the way, the headline in the Tribune.
Right. Let's talk about that. A secret meeting. Right-wing radio host Dan Prof dangled $20 million to Darren Bailey's governor run.
Well, first of all,
that's normal. I mean,
a secret meeting. It was a meeting. Every campaign meeting is supposed to be done in public.
Okay, but unscheduled helicopter trip from downstate to meet political operative and right-wing
radio
host.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
For a closed-door meeting to talk about serious campaign.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Ray Long is auditioning to be an author of thrillers or something, political thrillers. Going to try and option this.
Prof met both men at the front door and led them to a secluded room where he placed a white envelope on a table and said it contained $20 million.
First of all, I didn't do that. That's just absurd.
Okay. Exactly.
So we got to have this meeting. We got to have it right away. We're just right after the primary because we got to make a decision here. And it's very simple. And I've said this. I've said this publicly. I've said this on this show. The position was from afar, as we watched, we did our own thing in the independent expenditure pack. Mm-hmm. Bailey did his own thing in the primary. And we did not think that the Bailey campaign was ready for prime time. We didn't think the messaging was good. We didn't think this campaign staff was talented around him. And we were right.
They were right, especially after the Highland Park shooting. Oh, my God. I mean, if you were there, that would have never have happened.
So he said, look, supported him for all these reasons I articulated innumerable times publicly and on this show and elsewhere. And so we got to figure out what's the best play. I didn't want to go run Bailey's campaign. I don't want to deal with it. I like doing the super PAC thing.
Did they offer you to run his campaign?
No, it's not. No.
Because then you'd have to leave the show.
It's not an offer. This was like I wasn't auditioning for anything.
No, I know, but the Tribune makes it read like you were.
It was. I prefer to stay outside, but the consensus from our side was it would be better if I was inside in terms of stewardship of Uihlein's support and the quality of the campaign that would be run.
Right.
Okay. Fine. I'll do it. If Bailey's okay with it, obviously he's the candidate. It's his call. Then I'll do it, even though I don't want to. So we had the meeting, and that's what I said. Here it is. This money that Uihlein has committed, and it wasn't like, you know, like a Bond episode. I pushed an envelope across the table, and I was stroking a furry cat.
As you met him at the door to Chicago Area Golf Club.
Yeah, I met him at my club, and we went to a meeting room. I mean, it's just like, yeah, we had a meeting.
Make it like a Harlequin romance.
And so I said, so it's internal, external. But either way, the money goes where I go. That's it. So you decide. And Bailey decided they thought that they ran a good campaign in the primary and they knew what they were doing and so on and so forth. So that was the decision that was made and we parted company and that was the last time we talked. about the campaign or anything else.
Right.
So.
So this is a bit of a witch hunt.
Well, of course it is. This is what is lawfare? Tie up money, tie up people's time, your opponent's money, your opponent's time. You know, or bleed them a little bit, waste their time. You generate salacious headlines from your dutiful scriveners in the press, like this COVIDian goof, Ray Long. Ray Long just tweeted out, this is just a site. Five close friends and neighbors have caught COVID in the last 2-3 weeks. It ain't over till it's over. I haven't had it yet. And he posted on Twitter, here's my shot, my 9th so far. Ray Long. Oh,
that's right.
There's your balanced, there's your balanced, even-handed, objective Chicago Tribune political reporter, in addition to, you know, that drunk Rick Pearson, who's, transactional in nature.
Did he even show up yesterday? Did he have an intern there?
It's just all hype and nonsense. And then you get some, you know, some ankle biters inside the perimeter, the typical sniping within so-called Republican Party ranks by people who are completely irrelevant and demonstrate they are on a daily basis. So that's what it is. I mean, I think it's sort of boring, but I know some people were sort of all
foaming at the mouth about this.
So anyway, all right, Greg and Schomburg, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Well, you and Donald Trump, guess what? You have a very commonality, because as you described this situation, it's almost like the Bragg case. They're determining what the rules are for the next step of the process, whether you violated the second step, right?
Yeah.
And I've got one more comment, too. And the second comment is this: the Mark Vargas Illinois Review piece that came out last night is one of the most sloppy pieces of journalism I've ever seen. Let's say they are.
Okay.
It would get an F in high school, because the way this thing was set up, there was a two paragraph and the headline was, you know, Dan Prof calls Trump this, that, and the other thing. And then the second part of it was abortion. And that was the first two paragraphs. And then the rest of it was everything that you're talking about with the Bailey campaign. And, you know, you looked at it and you think, like, why in the world did they do that except to slam you? That's all I got.
Well, that's what they're doing. I mean, those are a couple of the ankle biters I'm talking about. That stupid blog. I mean, it's like why even address it?
Right.
But you know, people make bad decisions. We had that. Mark Vargas is a kid's total charlatan, but he fooled AM560. He fooled Judson College. Just like AM560 got fooled by Joe Walsh, I didn't.
You knew all along.
So, you know, I mean, this. What have I said before? I mean, there's no quality control within Republican ranks here in Illinois, which is one of the reasons you don't have a party. Party can't police itself. There's no standards of conduct. There's no threshold for leadership. There's no punishment for bad actors, bad behavior. So you just have, like, you know, a bunch of little wannabe warlords running around. They got a blog, or they got a consultancy, or they got a PAC, or they got one candidate that they've convinced or something like this. And, yeah, it just continues to fracture and fracture. We don't have any point. I mean, it's just... You wonder why people don't want to get involved, because who would want to get involved in this sort of, like, juvenile feces show that is the Republican Party, for the right to get into the graduate feces show that is the larger political environment, the right to try to fight back from a position of weakness against the Jelly Bellies and the Harmons and the Welches of the world now. Chris, South Loop, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Well, I think it was probably one of the nicest birthday presents you ever got. it provides a hell of a lot of fun. And number two...
It was kind of fun. It was so silly.
Exactly. And you're seeing these twerps who have been, you know, who have stuck by their computer terminal, who you have appropriately characterized down through the ages. They have their one moment to try and, you know, land a brickbat on you. And they are, it's so pathetic. It's just proving the major point. Legally, and I don't want to get into law school here or anything, but I mean, if they don't have any rules and they do something to you, isn't that a bill of attainder by definition?
Right.
Right. And you know, Goppers in Illinois are a pathetic lot. And I say this as one who consciously chose to become one 123 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very sad story, but any ankle biters inside the perimeter, as you just said a moment ago, ought to ask themselves, where would the party have been in that particular year had you and Dick Uihlein not stepped up and done what you did? I mean, it's hard to believe, but it would have been worse, because everybody with an IQ over room temperature knows that, you know, Dr. Bailey had no more business running for governor than one of the pigs on his farm down there. And that was shown to everyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was shown to everyone's satisfaction about, I don't know, 4 or 8 months before the primary. How he won is because of JB. And
well,
you know, JB's upset because he got in.
Well, he won because of us, but the pack and taking apart Irvin, because we're the ones who took apart Richard Irvin.
Irvin the Democrat from Aurora. I forgot about him.
Right.
Anyway, I hope you enjoyed your birthday.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thanks, Chris. Well, yeah, I mean, supported Bailey because he stood up during COVID, because he proved himself in Springfield on the issues he said he would stand up for when we first supported him in a Republican primary that he won because our backing, by the way, all this, you know, Dan doesn't win any races and stuff. That's fine. Whatever. I mean, to just have people that are outside the perimeter that that don't know politics or were on a different side than me in a different race, or have some other ulterior motive, that just take cheap shots and they say things that aren't true because I guess they don't have anything compelling that is true. That's usually the case, isn't it? Jim in Sheboygan.
Well, Dan, I'm just wondering where to send to the Legal Defense Fund for Jan Prof.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Do you have a GoFundMe?
If you set one up, please send me an email or something so that I can contribute. I'm going to start buying lottery tickets today in hopes that we hit the big one, and then we'll really get that Legal Defense Fund going.
Thanks for the call, Jim. I appreciate the support. Yeah, and if I do end up in State Board of Elections prison, I'll make sure to get everybody the my account number at the prison commissary.
Yeah, so you can, and I'll help you with Chirp so you can text.
Yeah.
That's the new thing.
Yeah, though. Wonderful.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Mr. Proft, it has come to my attention that you were 15 minutes late to yesterday's hearing, and I need to know why.
It's so funny that they reported that. I mean, that just shows how venal they are. Yeah,
What happened? Parking?
What happened is they set the meeting for 10 a.m. and it took me an hour and 10 minutes to get downtown. That's from our studio. That's what happened.
Was there a warrant for your arrest?
Another caper solved. And by the way, of course, I communicated this to my attorney, who communicated to the hearing officer that, look, I'll get there as soon as I can, but I'm off the air at 9 and I'll be right downtown. And that's what happened. But I know there's something conspiratorial afoot. It's a disrespect of the sacred institutions of the Illinois State Board of. I mean, it's just so asinine. Oh, it just shows how small, how really, really tiny the Chicago Press Corps and the Chicago political class really is.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I saw from footage earlier this morning that model Hamas, you know, like model UN, that's my new term, Campus Huns, okay. Model Hamas protesters have seized a building at Columbia University.
They went from glamping to seizing a building. So now undergrads can't get in to go to their classes. But, you know, what else is new?
Well, they're expansionist in nature, like good Islamofascists. Why would they seize the building after they were engaged in such productive
talks.
Negotiations
Who's negotiating
with the administration?
With kids.
This letter that the president of Columbia University, Manoush Shafiq, sent out is really something.
All right, what is it? Let me hear it.
She outlines the negotiations while... conceding the hostile climate on campus in the direction of Jewish students. But it's really, I mean, this is a combination sort of hostage slash surrender letter. And it just really provides insight into one of the fundamental problems here. One of the fundamental problems with these supposed wonderful universities, not just in the Ivy League, but across the country, as we're seeing, because now we have the full copycat effect happening across the Western world. I saw Vancouver, McGill University. It's all over the place now. Both Manoush Shafiq, president of Columbia, both sides in these discussions put forward robust and thoughtful offers and worked in good faith to reach common ground. We thank them for all their diligent work, long hours, and careful effort, and wish they had reached a different outcome. While the university will not divest from Israel, the university offered to develop an expedited timeline for review of new proposals from the students by the Advisory Committee for Socially Responsible Investing, the body that considers divestment matters. The university also offered to publish a process for students to access a list of Columbia's direct investment holdings. Additionally, the university offered to convene a faculty committee to address academic freedom and begin a discussion on access and financial barriers to academic programs and global centers. The university offered to make investments in health and education in Gaza, including supporting early childhood development, support for displaced scholars. These are important ideas that emerge from this dialogue, and we plan to explore them into the future. Well, wonderful. But we must also take into account the rights of all members of our community, and the encampment has created an unwelcoming environment for many of our Jewish students and faculty. Yeah. Unwelcoming. I think that's...
Their civil rights are being violated.
It's generous. Anyway, we want this thing to go away, but we don't know how to do it. We don't want to deprive anybody of anything. For all the reasons above, we urge those in the encampment to voluntarily disperse. We are consulting with a broader group in our community to explore alternative internal options to end this crisis as soon as possible. We will continue to update the community with new developments. They spent all this time treating this model Hamas as their peers from both a intellectual, moral, and authority perspective, and they model Hamas said no deal to your counter proposals, and so we're keeping the encampment and we're taking over building. And we're going to vandalize some things, and we're going to do what we want, and you're not going to do anything about it.
Well, they renamed the building that they took over after a girl, a Palestinian girl, who was killed in an Israeli airstrike. So they started that. They put the new label on the building.
Well, of course.
So
this
is part of the expansion process. They want to open air concept room.
That's what they do. They rename things.
Yeah.
They tear down monuments. They occupy buildings. They set things on fire. They vandalize things. They rename things. This is what Neo-Jacobins of all stripes do, and these are Neo-Jacobins of the model Hamas stripe.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. You can reach us on our text line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. You call it model Hamas. I call it glamping for Palestine. and the encampment at Northwestern, they have struck an agreement, Dan. 17 of the 18 negotiators from the encampment have decided that this is what they're going to do. Organizers have agreed to remove all tents except for one medical tent. Only NU students, faculty, and staff will be allowed to protest on Deering Meadow. They all have to be done and moved out by June 1st, which is strange because if you're going to do something, it's not even tomorrow is May. Like, get on this. So they're really not doing anything. And then, of course, there's a list of demands that they want.
It's a surrender.
A new Muslim center built and all this.
Yeah, it's a surrender. That's what these universities are doing. That's all they know how to do is surrender to the mob. The mob that they have spent decades creating and turning their campus over to. So understand who they're negotiating with. This guy, Kamani James, who has been one of the point people at Columbia, and I reported, because I saw the reporting yesterday, that he has been suspended. I think he's just been barred from campus. I don't know if there's a distinction there, but because Columbia is at the same time saying, well, we're not going to be suspending any students. I don't know if Kamani James is an exception to that rule, but this is a Zoom meeting because of a video he posted in January calling for the death of all Zionists. Oh, God. This is who Columbia is negotiating with. This is a good example of the type of people that they're trying to reach common ground. They're making these concessions. Kamani James, Columbia's acceptance rate under 4%. This is one of the smartest people in the country, one of our best and brightest. He's smarter than all of you listening and me and Amy, too. So we're to believe. Kamani James, during this meeting, and also, too, listen to the exchange of who is on this, I guess, sort of first rung of the disciplinary regime on the campus of Columbia.
My name is Sasha Lacadoway. I'm one of the associate directors in the Center for Student Success and Intervention.
I'm Kamani James. I use he, she, they pronouns. Zionist in my DM wanting to meet up and fight. I don't fight to injure or for there to be a winner or loser. I fight to kill. See y'all in New York, January 2024.
Mm-hmm. So that's specifically what we're going to be discussing today. Do you see why that's problematic in any way?
No.
Do you think that there's a serious weight in taking someone else's life?
I think there is a serious weight in taking someone's life. And at the same time, I think that taking someone's life in certain case scenarios is necessary and better for the overall world. And so I personally have never killed anyone. Thank the Lord that no one has put me in that position. Though when Hitler died, the world rejoiced. Everyone looks back at that time period and said that Hitler needed to die because he was exacting an immense amount of harm against the world. And so just like that, during the Haitian Revolution, Haitian slaves had to kill their masters in order to gain their independence. These were masters who were white supremacists. What is a Zionist? A white supremacist. And so let's be very clear here. I'm not saying that I'm going to go out and start killing Zionists. What I'm saying is that if an individual who identifies as a Zionist threatens my physical safety in person, i.e. puts their hands on me, I am going to defend myself. And in that case scenario, it may come to a point where I don't know when to stop.
Oh, my God.
Does that make sense?
I understand what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. There should not be Zionists anywhere. Zionists are Nazis.
For my identity as a Black queer woman in New York City, obviously, if I'm on the train and I'm sexually assaulted or harassed in some way, like, I may turn around and slap somebody, right? Doing and saying that versus saying that, you know, you fight to kill. And you made a comment earlier where you stated that you may not know your own strength behind why, or you may not have the resistance to stop, right? That is kind of like what I'm taking from what you were sharing, that it could get to that point.
Okay, both of them have taken a break, everyone. So these are two Black women. I just wanted to throw that out there. So I'm not too keen on going too, but yeah, these are two Black women in the meeting, just in case y'all couldn't tell already. But these are two Black women. The meeting's a joke. They definitely were hoping that I was going to walk back the I fight to kill. Your initial letter from your office mentioned that this meeting will determine if it needs to reach or go to a disciplinary hearing. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'll be being notified about in 24 to 48 hours.
That, and it can also be that we need additional information. All of our letters are standard, so it depends on kind of like everything that you disclosed to us today and what we discussed.
Right, right, right. Okay, then. Well, thank you.
Columbia's finest.
So that's Kamani James, and that's how Columbia handles a Kamani James on campus. Aren't you impressed?
His homicidal tendencies. God.
Kamani James threatening people's lives is sort of comical. Come on and bring it, Kamani.
Yeah, see how tough you are.
But nonetheless, his posture that Zionists shouldn't, and those were highlights from an extended interview, of course, so they were clipped together. But the posture, though, of wanting to eliminate quote-unquote Zionists, and when he says Zionists, what you should really just hear is Jews.
Right.
What was the Zionist movement? To recreate Israel and make it secure.
And that's what
started
so
in the late 1800s.
So what's so sad is all these Jewish students are, you know, one student at Northwestern, she said they're promoting Jewish hate.
They're promoting
with
more
all
than
these encampments.
They're promoting more than that.
Flags. Not letting them into certain areas.
Carl in Northlake, you're in Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is just comical. I'm going to start with one quick preemptive thing here. Israel just trying. The Jewish people are not trying to take over the world.
Oh, you're breaking up there.
These philosophers are just comical. They would be the first ones cowering like little girls if there was any real violence, calling for a cop, and they wouldn't care if it was a white cop to defend them.
Thanks for the call, Carl. They melt into puddles of tears as soon as there's any confrontation from police or anybody else. They play dead. They scream and screech.
Oh my God, you're hurting me.
Yeah, I mean, they're of course. This is politics via temper tantrum. That's what this is.
Well, and real quick, I just want to get this in there. First of all, Hamas isn't agreeing to the ceasefire. If you can tell, all these people in these encampments, not Israel, but also IU has gotten it right. University of Texas. University of Florida, listen to the. This is great. This is the anchor reading the message from University of Florida administrators to those who tried but did not succeed to put up tents.
This now from the University of Florida tonight. They've released a statement saying about the protests there. It reads in part, quote, "This is not complicated. The University of Florida is not a daycare, and we do not treat protesters like children. They know the rules. They broke the rules, and they'll face the consequences." Today, individuals who refused to comply were arrested after UPD, the university's police department, gave multiple warnings and multiple opportunities to comply.
Yeah, well, that's Ben Sasse, who's the president of the University of Florida, former Republican senator from Nebraska, and so that's an outlier. And even though Texas and Georgia, they've called in state troopers and so forth, and they've used law enforcement. I mean, Texas, you saw police having to use tear gas.
Right.
So, no, it's pretty out of control. And it's pretty out of control because, for the most part, what you have from people in charge of these campuses and the communities that surround them are appeasers, people who defer to the temper tantrum set of the left because they're fellow travelers. That's who they were 60 years ago, 40, 50, 60 years ago, and they see no distinction.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer.
That sounds mean it's time for in-depth history with Frank, the history teacher from Arlington Heights, because there's nothing new in this world. It's just the history we don't know, and Frank does. Take it away, Frank.
Good morning. During the primaries, Nikki Haley was excoriated for deviating from the notion that the Civil War was partially started because of topics other than slavery. Now, one can theorize about secondary causes, but it's clear that the catalyst of the war between the states was that Abraham Lincoln had absolutely no intention of allowing slavery to expand into the Western territories. As such, Lincoln's ballots were never circulated in the Southern caucuses, where he got zero popular votes. He won anyway by sweeping the North, which led to Southern hyperventilation and secession. The Republican-dominated Congress that remained then quickly passed legislation that expanded economic mobility. The Homestead Act encouraged the development of small, free-labor, independent farms throughout the West instead of the slave-labor plantations that the Southern grandees had wanted there. Another act was the partial funding of land-grant colleges through the Morrill Act, opening up educational opportunities for the poor and middle class. And finally, the financing of the Transcontinental Railroad also greased the wheels of commerce and migration. Today, we need a similar type of government sponsorship of economic opportunity, as there are many large corporations and private equity firms that control so much wealth that they seek yield enhancement by buying up the housing stock instead of traditional debt and equity investments. Many homes, therefore, get multiple offers on the spot, so many average Americans find it difficult to buy a house and live the American dream, just like it was difficult for some in 1860 to acquire land and own a farm. We need a new president, ideally one who has recently experienced a poor or middle-class lifestyle. Our current one is so far removed from Scranton that he was once labeled the senator from MBNA, the credit card company. He didn't get that moniker for nothing.
Very good, Frank. That's actually a timely topic, too. The Wall Street Journal has a big piece about those big private equity firms buying up housing stock in this country and the implications. We'll have to tackle someone
who had, you know, is looking for homes and 10 offers on homes. You know, so it's tough to get homes sometimes. It really is. So something's got to happen. We need an economic opportunity for these young people, because if they don't have it, they're going to act out, as we see.
All right, Frank from Arlington Heights, the history teacher from Arlington Heights, always good, in-depth history.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Golly gee, one CNN poll and the Democrat Socialists are in full crack up. Listen to the message that Serpenthead James Carville has for these snotty 26-year-olds. He comes across as a bit of a snotty 26-year-old himself.
If they get a hold, there will be no government left. There will be no rights left. You'll live under theocracy. You'll end up Christian nationalism. But that's all right, you little 26-year-old. You don't feel like the election's important to me. They're not addressing the issues that I care about.
Wow.
Hey, Jim, have
relax,
Mary fix
man.
You a cocktail. You know, take a break.
A little unhinged.
Just a follow-up question. Since we've been here before, the left seems to forget this. We had a President Trump. We had Republican control of Congress. Why didn't the theocracy come then? Why didn't the government dissolve? In fact, government spending increased. Government kept expanding rather than dissolving. And, the rights that were stripped. What, you mean the invented rights you have for people in this country illegally? Those rights? Or I'm a bit confused. It'd be fun to have a conversation with Serpenthead, but he just likes to rant and make snide comments from the comfort of his own home on social media.
Getting a little cranky there, huh?
But it's not just him. Nancy Pelosi took time away from day trading to appear on MSNBC with Katie Turr.
And she attacked Katie Turr.
Katie Turr, like Keith Olbermann, gal pal.
Well, yeah,
MSNBC, new propaganda reader. I mean, not exactly a Trump loyalist, but hey, this is not the time for any pushback.
And Joe Biden is doing that, created 9 million jobs in his term in office, Donald Trump has the worst record of job loss of any president. So we just have to make sure people know.
That was a global pandemic.
He had the worst record of any president. We've had other concerns in our country. If you want to be an apologist for Donald Trump, that may be your role, but it ain't mine. And
I don't
he has
think
the worst.
That anybody can accuse and me of that.
Hey, you,
wow.
you watch yourself, little lady.
Wow.
You watch yourself. Isn't this great?
Oh,
it's fun. Goodness. It's fun amid a lot of other things that are unfun. You got to take the joy where you can find it. Ron Johnson is a Republican United States Senator from Wisconsin, of course. He joins us now. Senator Johnson, thanks for being with us again. Appreciate it.
Good morning, guys. Hope you're doing well.
You too. The left doesn't seem to be mentally. They're a little touchy. They don't like the polling numbers, I suppose, that are being bandied about.
Well, I don't take too great a comfort in that. You know, these elections, 2022 should have been a blowout. 2024 should be a blowout. I don't know how bad it has to get. I don't know how much of the radical left agenda needs to be exposed. And that's really what's happening on college campuses today. The radical mm-hmm. left agenda is being exposed before a large majority of Americans open up their eyes and realize these people are out to destroy our country. They have nothing positive to offer. They do nothing to build things. They just know how to destroy things. And that's pretty much the definition of the Democrat Party. Look what they're doing in terms of our border. Border security used to be a bipartisan issue. Back in 2006, a bunch of Democrats, including Biden and Obama and Hillary Clinton and Chuck Schumer, voted for the Secure Fence Act. Now they all want an open border. And I asked Secretary Mayorkas in a hearing the day after Schumer just dismissed his impeachment hearing, I asked him, why did you do it? Why do you want open borders? And, of course, he just disagreed with the premise of my question. So these people are infuriating. But, again, I'm not going to take any comfort in any poll until we actually win in 2024.
Oh,
we have to win in 2024.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, that's far from over. These are snapshots in time, but it is interesting that the anxiety that is clearly evident on the other side. Speaking on the border and migrants, the situation continues to devolve, particularly in the areas that are getting hit the hardest, like the San Diego sector. And I saw a report that San Diego Airport now has given illegal immigrants their own line through the security checkpoints.
Yep.
Because they don't have any documentation verifying who they are. It's really something to watch the videos of Americans waiting in a security line to present their ID and go through. And then people in this country illegally also going through, but without the same security requirements as Americans.
And, of course, a lot of these illegal immigrants are military-age men. You know, we know what's happened down the Darien Gap. We have all these non-governmental organizations who the American taxpayer funds are coordinating this invasion of our nation. Camps set up specifically for Chinese military-age men. You know, so we're of these young men from countries that are adversarial to America, and we just let them in. And like you said, they don't have to pass the same type of screening we have to pass. The goal last time I was down the border, according to the Biden administration, imposing on Customs and Border Patrol is to encounter, process, and disperse within 8 hours. So that's a really good vetting process. And, of course, the Biden administration mandated vaccines for Americans, for our finest among us in the military, but just wave through illegal immigrants who knows what kind of antibiotic resistant diseases they may be waving through. Again, this is a debacle. It's a catastrophe. But by and large, mainstream media is not covering this the way they should.
I know. It's like they've become bored with it. I mean, I used to live in El Paso, Senator, and people used to come in, you know, a few people a day, maybe some, you know, downtrodden, without shoes on. And now I'm seeing people with Gucci bags, Louis Vuittons, neck pillows, Beats headphones, and a phone coming over from China, very well dressed. And these people, why? I mean, what are they seeking asylum from?
Well, they want to come to America for what America offers. Most of them, they're coming here for opportunity, but some of them are here to create mayhem. There could be potential terrorists in the ranks, sleeper cells. I mean, that's what's so unbelievably risky about what the Biden administration is doing and what the mainstream media, by and large, has been covering up. It's not like they've gotten bored and stopped covering it. They just never really covered it until, you know, mayors like Mayor Johnson in Chicago, Mayor Adams in New York, realize their sanctuary cities are going to get overrun by this massive invasion. And they started squawking about it. The mainstream press had to start covering it. But, again, didn't cover it the way they would have covered it had this been under a Republican presence watch.
Well, not only is it ongoing and uninhibited, they're looking to increase the flow. At least some of them are, the members of Congress I'm talking about, speaking of what we're seeing on college campuses. Against the backdrop of what we're seeing on college campuses and what we know has happened in Gaza, Jamal Bowman, you know, Fire Marshal Jamal there in the House, offered this. Take a listen.
Should the United States bring in people from Gaza?
Well, we are a land of immigrants, and we are a land of asylum seekers. Anyone escaping persecution and oppression and violence, the United States has always been an open home to those people. So whether they're coming from Palestine, Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, Mexico, Haiti, they're coming here to contribute to our economy, which 99.9% of them are. We've always been a place to open our doors to immigrants coming here. So, yeah, fully support that, and also fully support amnesty for the migrants who have been here for quite some time.
So resettle Gazans to America, provide amnesty for people here illegally, and send the message the world over that anybody who wants to come can come anytime for any reason, because 99.9% of you are net positive for the country.
Well, he's a card-carrying member of the radical left, and he's fully supportive of the destruction of this country, because that's what he's recommending. I'm sure he was probably all for the defund police movement. That's worked out really well. That's been such a disaster. Even radical leftists are backing away from that. They don't say that anymore because, well, it certainly didn't help them in the election, and they're realizing it's destroying their cities. Slowly but surely, they're beginning to realize that. But that's unfortunately what almost every policy of the Biden administration. I've often said, if you were asked to devise a strategy to destroy this country, you could not come up with a better game plan than the one being implemented by President Biden and his Democrats. The open borders, the massive, you know, 40-year high inflation caused by massive deficit spending, war on fossil fuel, the embarrassing, dangerous surrender in Afghanistan, which has emboldened people like Putin and Xi and the Ayatollahs. Again, America has been weakened dramatically by the Biden administration. And when America is weak, the world's a more dangerous place, and the world's now on fire because of it. So, no, the radical left is destroying this country. That's what Americans have to awaken to. They have to open up their eyes. This isn't something that just sort of happened. This has been long-term game plan. The Saul Alinsky rules for radical, right out of Chicago, the taking over of our universities and every institution in this country. They've infiltrated. They've burrowed in to all of our institutions, and they're destroying this country.
I wanted to get your reaction on another topic, because you've been one of the congressional leaders on the reckoning for all the COVID response policies at the federal government level, the reckoning that hasn't come, but maybe someday will. You and Rand Paul and a few others on different topics. There's so many to cover under COVID. But recently, Cheryl Atkinson sat down with Mike Ware, who is the inspector general for the SBA, to talk about COVID fraud in the two programs that were stood up for small businesses. And here's what Inspector General Ware told Cheryl Atkinson.
We conservatively estimated that $200 billion in potential fraud existed in these programs.
That's shocking. I mean, that, I think your report said, means at least 17% of the funds were dispersed to potentially fraudulent actors, more than $136 billion in EIDLs and $64 billion in PPP. So 17%, that's unacceptably high, isn't it, for fraud?
I would absolutely agree with you that it is, especially when you're talking about $200 billion.
And against $200 billion, conservatively, as the inspector general said, you have DOJ press releases about prosecutions for people that stole a million here and a million there. You know, it's one of these things where, and this is an underappreciated discussion underdone discussion about government. Look, I understand I got to pay taxes, and I'm fine paying taxes if it's going for the betterment of some segment of the community and, of course, the larger country. But when it's just ripped off by criminals without consequence, it's a bit more unnerving. And certainly we're in the hundreds of billions of dollars of all the money that was printed and spent and drop shipped everywhere. Part of the reason why people are paying higher prices at the pump and at the grocery store now. And there just doesn't seem to be much interest from Washington, with few exceptions like yourself.
Well, this was the Uniparty in all their glory. You're talking about the tip of the iceberg in terms of the fraud.
Right.
The programs themselves are set up with no control. I mean, in order to qualify for PPP, you just had to be concerned that maybe the uncertainty because of the pandemic could harm your business. So then you got a loan that everybody knew was going to be forgiven. So I would say probably hundreds of billions of dollars went into PPP. Let's face it, we sent direct payment checks three times to over 166 million Americans. And at most, we had an excess, I think, about 17 million more unemployed than was the normal level. And that went down to about a 5 million excess within a few months. So at most, there were 17 million more unemployed than we had normally. And we sent out direct payment checks to 166 million Americans. Again, everybody likes free money. They just don't understand the consequence of this massive deficit spending. That's why a dollar you hold today is only worth 83.8 cents. Now, Biden grotesquely exacerbated that. When he came into office, you know, the pandemic recession was over. Our economy was coming roaring back. There's all that all those dollars sloshing around the economy, all that pent-up demand. The last thing you should have done is add to it with more deficit spending. And Democrats, of course, added trillions of dollars. And that's what really sparked it. We might have gotten by had it not been for Democrats' massive deficit spending spree when they came to office in 2021.
Just on a political note, too, we started talking about the November election. Let's conclude with that topic as well. What's your assessment of the job Steve Daines is doing as head of the Senate Republican Campaign Committee, and your optimism about Senate Republicans gaining control in November?
Well, he's working his tail off like Rick Scott did the cycle before. You try and find good candidates, but in the end, it's the people of the states, Republicans in those states, that choose who their nominees are. And, sometimes they choose wisely, sometimes they don't. But, we're trying to do everything we can to get a majority. We have to. We can't have Chuck Schumer continue to be the majority leader. He'll continue to do things like, dismiss an impeachment charges against Mayorkas. Not even hold a hearing. So we have to win all three branches. We got two branches, but both branches in Congress and the presidency. We have to do that. Or I agree with Elon Musk and Trump. If we don't win this November, this nation, it's over.
Senator Ron Johnson, Republican from Wisconsin, of course. Senator Johnson, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
Every day.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Insert Democrat Socialist here.
Runs the Democratic House floor for 30 plus years running. He's promising this and he's stealing that. Where can you get that kind of money? He's using your house like his own piggy bank. You ought to know by now. You can pay off your house here in Illinois, but you can never keep up with the taxes. Oh, how it's always been the plan to have a taxpayer pay, no doubt. Not a matter of if anymore, but when you're moving out. I said, when you're moving out.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. That theme music means it's time for a weekly confab with Ted Dabrowski from WirePoints, wirepoints.org. All things Illinois policy related. Keeping up with the taxes on your house. How about keeping up with the taxes for your Bears? The Bears pitch for a new dome stadium, projected to be $4.7 billion. Actually, though.
Uh-oh, what are the real digits, Dan?
When you end up including... The cost to retire the existing debt used to renovate Soldier Field and Guaranteed Rate Field, still paying off that. It's more like $5.9 billion. But again, $1.2 billion for the Bears and the White Sox. I mean, can you really put a price on making the Bears and White Sox's dreams come true? I can't. And I'm sure that the political class in Springfield won't either. I still don't understand what the Bears are really doing. If this is a leverage play to extract more from Arlington Heights, because it makes zero economic sense for them to try to build this dome on the lakefront.
And to rent when they can own. Like, why would they want to have to deal with the Chicago Park District again and the city of Chicago?
I know these are
such a headache.
These are exciting times for both of those franchises, though, with the Bears getting Caleb Williams and the White Sox already at six wins this year.
Oh my goodness, this is so exciting!
They're in a hot streak after taking down the Rays, so it's going well.
But Kevin Warren said at that press conference, he said that he met with Jerry Reinsdorf the Sunday before, and he promoted, "Wouldn't it be great if we could build two new stadiums at the same time in Chicago? Think of the thousands of jobs we will create."
That will be persuasive to the Democrat Socialists in Springfield. I guarantee it. All the jobs for me, and you know that I can distribute, and the VIP treatment that I'm sure I will enjoy, and so on and so forth. It's a done deal. If that's what the Bears really want, you can bet your state government will be happy to use your dollars to underwrite it. That will happen. And I know that, oh no, but Jelly Belly said there's probably higher priorities. Oh yeah. The performative skepticism, so that over the course of the next couple months, we sat down at the negotiating table and we hammered out a deal, and I raked them over the coals to make sure this is the best deal possible for taxpayers and for the Bears and for the lakefront and so on and so forth. And it all came together so beautifully. That's what happens when you work together for the people, as Democrat Socialists do. I can write the press release now.
Yeah, and they'll say, this is more about the Bears. This is about bringing NCAA basketball championships to Chicago, the Super Bowl to Chicago, concerts. It goes on and on.
Entertainment mecca, no question.
Yeah.
By the way, in addition to Caleb Williams, there was a local that the Bears drafted in the third round, an offensive lineman named Kieran Amagaje.
Was he from Hinsdale?
Hinsdale.
He's so cute. He was so happy. He had his godson or nephew with him, and that little kid would not let go of him. It was so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
When he got announced. That's the girly talk in me.
Yeah, and he went to Yale.
Yes, he did.
Uh-huh. Oh, and he also may be our new Colin Kaepernick.
Uh-oh, no.
Some tweets from Kieran Amagaje. Want to force childbirth on women and infringe on their right to choose just for those same kids to die in schools? What's pro-life about that?
Cringe.
That's a Yale grad. Real smart.
Grew up in Hinsdale.
Deep. Yeah, Hinsdale Central. So tear gas and rubber billets only reserved for BLM. Where was this energy this summer when we was protesting our dead brothers and sisters? They're just protesting because they team lost. That was his January 6, 2021 tweet. Yeah. Because he's down with a struggle from Hinsdale Central.
And then went to Yale.
Kieran Amadije, a Hinsdale native, grew up a Bears fan and met Matt Eberflus last year at the golf club his father belongs to. He said he told Eberflus he would one day be sitting in his office as a Bears draft pick. Eberflus reminded him of that interaction when the team called Amagaje to inform him that he was being drafted tonight. Wonderful story. The oppressed kid from Hinsdale who met Eberflus at his dad's country club. But he's all
suffering, man.
He's down with his BLM brothers and sisters.
He knows what it's like to suffer.
Future mayor of the city of Chicago, Kieran Amagaje. You heard it here first. All right, for more on the Bears Stadium finances, taxpayer financing. Ted, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy.
If you had us at 4.7, I mean, surely we can go to 5.9 for the Bears and the White Sox.
Yeah, what's a couple billion dollars among friends? And
exactly.
No, I think you know these stadiums have become arms. It's like an arms race, right? Everybody wants to have the bigger, better stadium than that was built somewhere else. And so, not only did these things become monstrosities, but we have previous bills to pay for. And when you start adding it all up, as some other analysts have done, suddenly that $4.5 billion comes closer to $6 billion. And those are monstrous numbers. And, you've had some guys on talk about the economics of these stadiums, but the economics don't work anymore. Maybe they did in the past, but they certainly don't work anymore.
That's certainly what Kansas City taxpayers decided, didn't they, after the Chiefs won yet another exactly. Super Bowl and, time for a new stadium. No, we like you, but we don't like you that much.
Exactly. And so that was one rejection. And then I think what people need to know is that there are private stadiums out there that are funded privately, and that's happened in Los Angeles for both the Rams and the Clippers out there. So those are private financings. So that is possible. And we have to remember that these guys have deep pockets, these owners, and they make a lot of money. So there's no reason to one to put the public at risk, and two, Chicago just doesn't have the numbers right now. Even if you wanted to say, hey, it's all going to be paid by tourists who come in and stay at hotels, there's a lot of risk on those numbers right now, especially with the crime going on and the lack of population growth. So,
what's funny is I'm old enough to remember not so long ago, there was a lot of loose talk about a second professional football team coming to Chicago.
Mayor Lightfoot was here.
If we're going to build, why don't we get another team and build another stadium so we get it all done at once? I mean, we could go to 10, 12 billion, right? I mean, what's the difference?
Taxpayers. LA's got the Rams and the Chargers.
Taxpayers don't know the difference. They don't care.
Well, and why don't we just own the teams, right? Why doesn't the public own the teams?
Yeah, like the Packers.
Let's make all that money ourselves.
Right. Yeah. It's a real windfall. All right. Well, yeah, it's just interesting on the economics of it all. And how this will play out politically, depending on what the Bears' real angle is.
Well, the Bears want to start construction now. They want it. They don't want to wait for the fall veto session. They demand action as soon as possible.
Yeah. Okay.
Are they going to get it, Ted?
Sorry.
Oh, I said, are they going to? They want action done now. Like they don't want to wait till the fall veto session to.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Dan's assessment was perfect. I think that's exactly what happens. Pritzker has to do all that, and eventually they'll negotiate something and make it sound good. And Dan's right. You could write the press release right now because you know how it's going to play out. It always does that around here. I don't know. I'm pretty skeptical. I think there's big concerns about if you build up a whole bunch of stuff around a Bears stadium, it's just going to take business away from somebody else, and people are going to spend their money at the football games, but they'll spend less money somewhere else. And so you don't get the economic growth that they say you're going to get. And it just becomes more debt and more burden on the public.
We mentioned in our conversation with John Lott yesterday, this new study that you did over at Wire Points about violent crime in Chicago, since we're continually told that it's going down. It's always going down while it's going up. So why don't you give us the details on that again?
Well, yeah, The big news is that murders are down, and that's true. They are down about 10%. But that's not that big of a number. They're still a lot higher. They're probably 10% higher than in 2019. So we're still worse off than before COVID and before George Floyd. But the reality is, and this is surprising because I thought that maybe we hit 5-year highs on violent crime last year. So I thought we'd get a little bit of a reprieve, just exhaustion by the city of all the crime. But no, the robberies continue to go up. We're about 2% over last year, but last year was 23% over the previous year. So we're still growing in robberies. And I think, that's got people scared, and aggravated batteries are a problem as well. And, I've been thinking about this stuff a lot, and this is traumatizing stuff, right? These robberies, these aggravated, that means somebody's got a gun, somebody's hurting you physically. They're going up, and that's what's scaring people. And it's happening, in Lakeview and in Lincoln Park and all over the city. And that's what's driving this fear, and you can't blame people for it because it's happening in daylight. The 68-year-old grandmother on a Sunday morning stroll, they come, these bad guys come and take her and throw her to the ground, beat her and take her stuff. If a grandmother can't walk around on a Sunday morning, in a decent neighborhood, watch out.
Yeah, but don't show it to anybody because then people will get upset. They don't want to see it. They want to avert their eyes as much as possible, even as they recognize what's happening, because unfortunately so many people have been victimized. You know somebody who's been hurt at minimum.
Yeah, Neil, and Dan, I thought of you when I was watching some of those videos, because one of the women screams a lot, so it reminded me of the scream that you caught some hell for.
Yeah.
But we also ran the numbers, you know, just on robberies, because that's become the big thing. And we compared it to New York City and Los Angeles. And yeah, we have doubled the rate of robberies than those cities, you know, on a per capita basis. So it's a big thing. And I think what it tells you is that we're not doing anything about crime. And as a matter of fact, I was going through the CWB page, and thank God they do what they do. But you go there and you just see criminal after criminal committing crimes while being out, you know, on parole or you know, gotten out for recent gun charges. It's happening over and over and over again. And you know, that Safety Act, I guess once we ever figure out what the hell's going on with the numbers, it's going to prove to be something pretty nasty.
And what do you think it says? I mean, Officer Luis Huesca was laid to rest yesterday, and the family did not want Mayor Johnson or Governor Pritzker to attend.
Yeah, you know, I heard you guys opening on that and you know, spot on that. I think, you know, and I was writing a piece yesterday, and my last line is about that, because, you know, you can say whatever you want about Brandon Johnson and what's happening in Chicago, but if you can invoke an image in your head of a slain police officer in Chicago where the mayor is not there, where the mayor's uninvited, disinvited, whatever you want to call it, that image right there should tell you how far we've come in terms of, you know, dysfunction and chaos in Chicago. You know, you think of a slain police officer, you think of a mayor being right there. And when he or she is kicked out, there's nothing more to be said. I think the picture, if you can picture it yourself, that's the image that tells you how bad we've become and, you know, how low we've come. And there's a lot of repairs to be made if we want to make the city great again.
Ted Dabrowski, president of WirePoints, WirePoints.org, all things Illinois policy related. Thanks, Ted.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning Answer.
On AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The DNC has been doing focus groups to figure out why people don't like Kamala Harris.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah. It's a real mystery. Just can't quite put their finger on it. One of the things that came from the focus groups, this I'm sure will come as a surprise to our listeners, that unlike me, there are people who do not find Kamala Harris's laugh particularly infectious and delightful.
Well, you know where her laugh came from. Her dear mom, okay? She laughs like her mom. Sometimes it's genetic. Sometimes you can't control it. But it's genuine, Dan, because she said so.
She explained on none other than the Drew Barrymore show the genesis of her laugh and how she embraces her laugh. Because if there's one thing that we know about Kamala Harris, she is authentic. And she will never dispense with her authenticity, because the other thing we know, in addition to the fact she likes Venn diagrams, is that she is a person of great integrity.
Oh, she is.
Integrity and authenticity, those are the words that come to mind when I think of Kamala Harris. Drew Barrymore did an unbelievable impersonation of Jiminy Glick in this interview. I don't know if do you remember Martin Short's Jiminy Glick show? I mean, Martin Short is hysterical.
Uh-huh.
Drew Barrymore is sitting 5 inches
she's
from Kamala Harris on the couch. She is leaning in.
She's holding her hand.
I was just saying, just kiss her.
Make out. I mean, honestly, she looked like she wanted to make out with her. Or then maybe jump on her lap and start breastfeeding.
You got to listen.
I thought that was coming next.
I mean, it's great to see. You got to see it too. I'll tune out. But just listen to the cadence of Drew Barrymore. It really is. I thought she was doing a bit like a Stuart Smalley or a Jiminy Glick bit, but she's not. This is how gone Drew Barrymore is. She went somewhere with E.T. and she never came back.
You were asking me earlier about what it means to be like the first woman. And, you know, it's funny because people still got to get used to this, right? I mean, my staff, for example, sometimes they'll show me little things that just amuse me. Like, apparently, some people love to talk about the way I laugh.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I love your laugh.
Well, let me just tell you something.
Oh, my God.
I have my mother's laugh. And I grew up around a bunch of women in particular who laughed from the belly. They laughed. They would sit around the kitchen and drinking their coffee, telling big stories with big laughs.
Unzip their pants.
You know, I'm never going to be. That's just.
No.
I'm not that person. And I think it's really important for us to remind each other and our younger ones, don't be confined to other people's perception about what this looks like and how you should act in order to be, right? It's really important. It's important.
Yeah.
I love that message.
I love her to pieces.
And literally she's like, so close to her lips, she's holding her hand, and she's all in, and she's got one leg up on the couch. She doesn't care about the audience. She wants Kamala. Oh, yeah.
Well, obviously, that brought down the house, okay? Uh-huh. And then it was time for Drew Barrymore to provide some profundity of her own. Where we are in this country right now, I think Drew Barrymore really captures it. Okay. Where we are and what we need.
I keep thinking in my head that we all need a mom. I've been thinking that we really all need a tremendous hug in the world right now.
Yeah.
But in our country, we need you to be Mamala of the country.
Yes. And you get a call. Oh, that's a good show.
I know.
As a woman who respects so much. And wants to share and wants to be confident and has no ounce of meat.
Don't you do it, Drew?
Yeah. When we lift each other up, we all rise.
That's exactly right.
We rise.
We hear each other. Women love each other. Support each other.
That's right. However, we need a great protector.
Yeah.
Kamala, will you be my Mamala? My great protector. Drew, don't do that. You're gonna make me cry. Don't do that. Big hug right now. You, Drew Barrymore, every time.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Our text line is 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. I'm guilty. I've watched her show a few times. Yes, I have. Sometimes by accident, sometimes on purpose. I have never, ever seen her act that way with a guest.
Oh, come on.
No,
come on. It's all the same pap. I mean, the whole, I am not competitive. I don't compete. I collaborate. We are in the business of lifting people up, right, ladies? Ladies? Well,
she might have mommy issues because she did cut her mom out of her life when she was 14 years old. Emancipation from her parents. Severing ties with her mom.
You know, we had
the worst pain said she's ever known.
We had Ron Johnson on the show, and he's like, the polls and the left is a little nervous about the polls. That showing Trump up and the swing states up, expanding his lead nationally. But he's like, I'm not taking much from that. I wouldn't be too confident. Just when you are thinking about being confident about what's going to happen in November, watch the Drew Barrymore show, because it'll remind you to take absolutely nothing for granted. Absolutely nothing for granted that this is going to be a fight through the finish line, because the audience of Drew Barrymore is out there, and it's a lot bigger than you think. Holy God.
We also learned from that interview that her favorite dipping sauce is barbecue sauce, and some juicy tidbits about her dating life before she was married to Mr. What's his name? The first, second dude.
Doug Emhoff.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, by the way, I don't know if you heard, he's helping out at Columbia University because he's the Jewish liaison between the White House.
I don't know if you've heard, but he's smooth down there.
What's your big beef with the Nazis?
What's my big beef?
Yes, it seems like you're always
What's
knocking.
What's my big beef?
Everything
with the Nazis?
You're always knocking the Nazis. Oh, it's time for Mel Brooks to knock the Nazis, it seems.
I don't know. I think they're rude.
I guess.
They're rude. That's comedy. That's the comedy that's gone. Martin Short and obviously Mel Brooks. It's Jiminy Glick, you know, this grotesque talk show host. That was parody
right.
a decade ago. Now parody it's Drew Barrymore, and it's serious. Oh, my God. Kevin in Austin, Texas, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I normally don't laugh out loud when I listen to your show. I'm thinking about, oh, my gosh, is there one way ever going to turn around or people going to get involved? The Jiminy Glick line had me laughing hysterically. It's unbelievable because it was so true. I saw that thing scrolling through Twitter yesterday. And she's just sitting there with her legs crossed, like 2 inches away from Kamala.
She wanted to make out.
Unbelievable.
Thanks for the call. I literally thought they were going to do like Stuart Smalley affirmations. I'm good enough. I'm pretty enough.
And God darn it, people like me.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally where it was going.
Mamalacare? Mamalonomics?
Oh, yeah.
People are texting
Mamala.
Mamalacare.
Mamalonomics. Yeah.
Dan and Amy, this reminds me of the scene from Boogie Nights when a cracked out Heather Graham asks a cracked out Julianna Moore to be her mom.
It's not bad. That's a pretty good reference. It's not bad. Andy in Dallas, Texas.
The infantilization of about half this country seems to be complete. If we ever do come to a hot civil war, the side that wants this country to regain its sanity is going to have to be okay with shooting adult babies, because these people are it's beyond comprehension what children and just immature idiots they are. I just can't. It's almost comical, but it's pretty sad too.
Thanks for the call, Andy. We have rooms for adult babies now, literally right. Places adult babies can go to be babies,
right, to sit in high chairs and have some food and to be changed on a diaper table. Yes. That place did close in Mount Prospect, but there's others.
So what Andy's talking about, the infantilization. So Drew Barrymore is a popular daytime talk show host. Mm-hmm. She interviews people like the Vice President of the United States. That says something about the culture. I got to go back to this guy.
Okay.
Human carbon-based life form. I don't think he goes by guy. But, of course, I'm talking about Kamani James. This is the guy at Columbia University. First of all, he got in. Secondly, he's was the lead organizer of the model Hamas that's taken over the campus and brought the administration to its knees. Mm-hmm. This guy has brought the University of an Ivy League, the administration of an Ivy League school to its knees. His post-disciplinary Zoom call commentary on what transpired after he was whistled before this disciplinary committee for saying that Zionists do not deserve to live and that he is open-minded to killing people if they, if he feels unsafe.
And so be glad. And so be glad, be grateful that I'm not just going out and murdering Zionists. I've never murdered anyone in my life, and I hope to keep it that way. That meeting was so dumb. I actually kind of hope they do kick me out, because I've been meaning to travel to South America. Obviously, the United States would never support the murder of Netanyahu. But imagine how many lives would be saved if not, and possibly, right? Because we all know that the replacement will probably, yeah, like, but, you know, philosophically speaking, the death of a maniacal genocidist like Netanyahu in Israel, his death would theoretically mean that many people would live. Zionists, they don't deserve to live comfortably, let alone Zionists don't deserve to live. The same way we're very comfortable accepting that Nazis don't deserve to live, fascists don't deserve to live, racists don't deserve to live, Zionists, they shouldn't live in this world.
Maniacal genocidist. That is the enunciation of an Ivy Leaguer. This is the guy with those views who has brought the Columbia University president and the entire administration to heel. Talk about a commentary on the culture. Oh, and of course, by the way, all those people that don't deserve to live that he wants to kill, including Bibi Netanyahu / Hitler, you know, the fascists and the
Zionists,
and the racists, that's all part of the pathway to peace.
Oh, right.
We have to kill our way to peace, don't you see? Who are the fascists and the Zionists and racists? Don't worry. Kamani James and his merry band will tell you. I'll identify them for you. Infantilization. Yeah, you could say that. Deborah in Arlington Heights.
It's measurable how much dumber I am just listening to that. I'm fully expecting that they're going to come out with a remake of Mr. Mom and call it Mr. Momola now.
Very good. Thanks for the call. And Michael Keaton is available to play Mr. Momola. the role that he was born to play. Could you imagine? Although I don't know if Hollywood would let.
I don't know.
He would have to declare that he is non-binary or something, I suppose. Yeah. They couldn't just. George in Naperville.
Yeah, Dan, I think Elton John's going to have a big resurgence if Kamala gets on the scene big time for the presidency, because The Bitch Is Back is a perfect song for her.
The Bitchula is back. George.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Hey, did you catch the Fawnie Willis debate? Fawnie Willis, you know, the Fulton County prosecutor, she's up for re-election. She's got a primary challenger, a Democrat named Christian Y. Smith, and they had their first debate sponsored by the Atlanta Press Club, and it went like this.
Let's meet the candidates. Christian Y. Smith is an author and attorney. Fawnie Willis has served as Fulton County District Attorney since 2021. Ms. Willis declined to participate in the debate and is represented by an empty podium.
Oh, that's, she really hit it out of the park, huh?
She'll also, Ms. Willis is an empty suit. She'll be represented by an empty chair in court as well. How that going to go?
Do you think her challenger has a chance?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how she's being received in Fulton County. But it was funny. He got to ask the empty podium questions.
Oh, did
and
he really?
Did. He's like, why aren't you here? Because why I'm here is because I care about constituents. I want them to hear my voice. Why aren't you here? Is it because, you know, he did it. And from what I saw, he did a pretty good job. It was very entertaining.
Oh, that's awesome.
Fawnie Willis, the empty suit at the empty
dress.
Podium.
Yes.
Yeah, empty and backward dress.
Yes, exactly, because that's a come hither look.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. The model Hamas at Columbia with our friend Kamani James that we've heard from out right now. sidelined by the administration. And the negotiations breaking down. We heard from another representative of the model Hamas at Columbia from their headquarters, their embankment.
Right, that they've already renamed after a girl from Gaza who was killed by an Israeli airstrike.
Their liberated zone. Yeah, of Christ. And then they have the seized building. They're expanding their empire on the campus of Columbia. Here's what this dude said, sending a message to the appeasers in the administrative offices that they are not impressed with the scare tactics.
These repulsive scare tactics mean nothing compared to the deaths of over 34,000 Palestinians. We will not move until Colombia meets our demands or they are moved by force. Colombia's threat to mass suspend, evict, or possibly expel students with only a few hours' notice violates university rules. Faculty in the University Senate who rejected Colombia's plan because it is illegal, were informed that rules of university conduct will not be applied in this instance because the university has declared a state of emergency to manufacture consent for mass suspensions and evictions. Protesters have been entirely peaceful, and the university has previously agreed that it has no grounds to call in the NYPD. This is not stopping Colombia from illegally declaring a state of emergency, which requires Colombia to falsely identify nonviolent protesters as a clear and present danger. Colombia's threats, distributed through flyers, are reminiscent of the flyers the Israeli army launches from the sky to Gazans. Today's threats come after days of fruitless negotiations in which the university refused to seriously consider our demands for divestment, financial transparency, and amnesty for students and faculty disciplined in the movement for Palestinian liberation.
And the genocide at Columbia. And the genocide.
Wow, they think these kids feel entitled?
Oh, boy.
What have we created?
They are under assault from an illegal war that the Columbia administration has declared on these students. This is good stuff. I mean, if it wasn't a representation of something so ugly and serious, but these temper tantrums, high-minded as they effort to be, are morbidly entertaining to me. I don't know. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by a Columbia University grad.
Uh-oh, how's he feeling today?
How's she feeling?
She feeling, I'm sorry.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. If she, maybe she can intercede and be part of the peace brokering process. Lionel Shriver is a contributor to The Spectator and best-selling author of We Need to Talk About Kevin and the recently released Mania. And she joins us now. Lionel, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Always nice to talk to you.
Has Columbia reached out to you to intercede on behalf of peace on the campus?
Funnily enough, no.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, Columbia has never acknowledged my existence or capitalized on the fact that I am one of their alumna. I don't think they're especially proud of me.
Well, yeah, you're a colonizer, right? Is that the problem? You're one of those colonizers that the kids are
talking
about.
And a white supremacist.
Of course.
Racist,
yeah, of course.
All that boring shit.
What's your review of all of this goings on college campuses starting at Columbia?
Well, it inevitably reminds me of the whole 1968-69 ruckus, in which I did not play a part. I was only 11 years old in 1968, and therefore also didn't then have the intellectual acumen to perceive how utterly pointless these demonstrations are. But in my hoary old age, it's pretty obvious that these protests are elaborately misdirected. I mean, Columbia University does not have any ability to affect the war in Gaza.
Right.
No one in Gaza, no one in Israel gives a toss what Columbia students think of what's happening. And they're not going to have an effect on the Biden administration especially either, whose effect on reality is also tangential. So it's a little painful. I mean, it's an act of hubris and vanity to imagine that all this posturing makes any difference to the real world.
Well, you know who's happy about it is Hamas. I mean, they think that this is great.
Of course. And, you know, I think, I mean, however comical it is for organizations like Lesbians for Palestine,
right.
you know, they just... The far left in the U.S. is just as undemocratic and vicious as the people in Hamas. And in some ways, they're the same kind of extremists. And, you know, it seems at first that these are strange bedfellows. But in actual fact, it's a natural embrace.
Well, right. And there's sort of a mania to this as well, as you see, you know, it happened on a few campuses. Then, of course, that everybody else who's similarly disposed on campuses across the Western world wants to get in on the program. And you gave a good interview to Brendan O'Neill, our friend Brendan O'Neill at Spiked on his podcast. And I enjoyed your observation. We've talked a little bit about it before as well. But on manias, obviously, we went through a mania with COVID. This is a sort of mania as well. You know it is when some of these people are talked to and they demonstrate their just rank ignorance about what they're protesting, who they're protesting, what they understand about the conflict, what they understand just generally about the world. So there's definitely a maniacal element to it. And I just wanted to sort of get your sort of restatement of how you see manias proceeding and how this one probably will.
Well, I'd have to agree that I would classify this Palestinian eruption across the United States especially, but it's also in other Western countries, especially the Anglosphere. I would characterize it as yet another mania. My new novel, which is called, unsurprisingly, Mania,
mm-hmm.
is an examination of this phenomenon, and it's especially addressing itself to the last dozen years that I have just watched these huge ideological obsessions sweep across the West with astonishing and, I have to say, alarming rapidity and universality. It started out with the obsession with transgenderism, then there was the Me Too movement. The COVID spread like potato blight across the planet. The Black Lives Matter movement, and I would also say that at this point, the climate alarmism also has all the characteristics. And you know that you're in the midst of a mania when, you know, everyone is saying the same thing. Everyone thinks the same thing, and it is not permitted to differ. And that was the case with each of these consuming, you know, what we're upset about now things. And I mean, I think what strikes me as transparently pathetic about the whole Palestinian thing is that it was the immediacy with which the left just got the message that despite the fact that October 7th in Israel was one of the most grotesque and morally disgusting events in recent history, which you would think that just any normal, decent person would find revolting. But, you know, within a couple of days, the left had pivoted from any sympathy with Israel, and this was before there was any retaliation on Israel's part militarily, we're pro-Palestinian. We're all for Hamas. And you actually had people on the left defending or by turns denying that October 7th even happened. And And I find this kind of groupthink horrifying. It's actually, that's not really the right word, because groupthink has the word think in it. It's completely unthinking conformism. And so, of course, they don't know what they're talking about. They've just got the memo. This is what you're supposed to be upset about now. And they operate as almost as a single organism. And from any distance, it's like, what is this? This is not like individual, independent human beings. This is just a mob. And that's the way the left thinks. And it's as if they're taking directions from some hidden force. You can blame social media if you like. That is clearly one of the main vectors of spreading what we're supposed to be upset about now. But and that's one of the explanations for why these manias spread internationally so quickly. But I wouldn't let these people off the hook just because they're on social media. It doesn't mean that you don't have the responsibility to think for yourself.
Right. I'm just surprised that there isn't more mania fatigue. You just mentioned you're careening from one to the other, and you mentioned a half dozen that all qualify. And you would think that at some point people would not just turn over their institutions as I'm getting, force-fed the latest orthodoxy on the latest apocalyptic challenge to humanity. I'm surprised by the lack of mania fatigue, where sensible people say, "Knock it off."
Yeah, well, it is exhausting, and I think these manias vary a little bit in so far as they take the entire population with them. There's usually an element that hives off and says, "Hold on here," or this isn't making any sense. I think one of the most successful manias, it remains the transgenderism thing, mm-hmm. that because we all got the message mysteriously, and I don't quite understand how this was communicated, that if we're uncomfortable with celebrating, pretending to change sex, we'd better keep our mouths shut. And for the most part, we did. And to my personal shame, it must have been a good 3 or 4 years into that elaborate celebration of transgenderism, which used to involve an almost immeasurably small number of human beings, that I finally spoke up and said, there's something wrong with this. I had very little company at that time. And it took years and more, and that would have been 2016. It took many years more for it finally to start to break that it was permissible to say, this is disturbing. This is mutilating children's bodies. This is ruining their ability to have a satisfying sex life. What good is it doing? And while doing a great deal of harm. It's possible for me to say that on the radio now, and I don't fear that someone's going to show up at my door with a bomb. But that was not the case for an uncanny period of time. And that is the nature of these consuming social moral panics. That's another word for them. Is that if you differ, you are not simply someone who disagrees. You are a heretic. You're an evil person. In the case of transgenderism, you are transphobe. It is a danger to your livelihood and reputation to swim against the tide.
Lionel Shriver is a contributor to The Spectator. She's the best-selling author of We Need to Talk About Kevin and the recently released Mania that she referenced. Lionel, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. And she joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcasts of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.